welcome to Chasing the Yield. I don't know why my voice just cracked there. I've been trying to clear it. Anyway, this is Chasing the Yield, week ending May 21st, 2021. My name's Kevin Bay. This is the podcast where I kind of review everything from my portfolios and any news attached to the stocks I invest in during the week. The purpose of this podcast is really just for my own use. The reason I started doing it is that, you know, I'm relatively new, I would say, to investing, and especially investing for dividends. I've only been doing it for a few years. And putting together this podcast and the blog helps me to more focus on what it is that I'm doing. You know, it also helps me watch closely any of the investments so I can make sure that, you know, I try to minimize my own personal risk. So anyway, this is episode number 5. Last week, again, you know, it was kind of a volatile market. I guess it's, you know, every week it seems to be volatile, but for me, actually, it wasn't too bad. I was down overall on a couple of the portfolios, but I'll get into that in a little bit. So where are we? We are towards the end of May here, almost beginning of June, and the coronavirus obviously is always in the news, as well as vaccines. I own stock in Johnson & Johnson, and they continue to make news. So the U.S. military has offered to provide some Johnson & Johnson vaccines for South Korean troops, according to the Defense Ministry on Monday. The offer came days before President Moon Jae-in is due to visit Washington for his first summit with President Joe Biden. Johnson & Johnson also cut by half expected deliveries of COVID-19 vaccines to the EU this week. An EU official told Reuters on Monday that compounding supply problems the companies face since it began shipping doses to the EU in April. Under its contract with the EU, J&J has committed to shipping 55 million doses of its one-shot vaccine, but midway through the quarter, it had delivered less than 5 million doses, less than 10% of its target. The GAVI Vaccine Alliance on Friday said it agreed to buy 200 million doses of Johnson & Johnson as it seeks to fill a big shortfall in the COVAX vaccine sharing program caused by India suspending exports. As a one-dose vaccine, J&J has particular relevance for places with difficult infrastructure, making it a very important addition to the portfolio, said GAVI CEO Seth Berkley. In other news, other financial news, pending changes to the tax law. There's a law being bandied about in Congress called the American Families Plan. It'll bring changes that may affect how you invest. So be cautious this year with how you manage your assets, because you don't want to make any drastic changes until the new law gets set in stone and you know exactly what you're dealing with. A few items of note are the top marginal rate is proposed to be increased to 39.6%. The top capital gains rate on long-term gains for those making over $1 million will be 39.6%, plus a 3.8% Medicare tax for a total of 43.4%. They're also proposing to step up basis, to eliminate step-up basis on inherited assets over $1 million. So that means, you know, say if you have a stock portfolio and it's worth over $1 million, and say when you set it up, you only put, you know, $100,000 into it. As it stands right now, if you grant that to somebody upon your death, if you have a beneficiary, that, you know, their basis starts at the $1 million. The proposal now would be to eliminate that, so whoever inherits that portfolio is going to have to most likely sell it in order to pay the tax on the capital gains. You know, you can argue one way or the other whether or not that's a good idea, but the thing is that would be a big shock compared to what it is right now. So be careful, consult your accountant, and watch that tax bill, the American Families Plan. Let's see, AT&T, which I do own stock in that, they announced that in 2022 they're going to be cutting their dividend. And I argue that it may not be such a bad thing. You know, yes, it's going to reduce my personal income when they do cut the dividend. But on the other hand, I think it'll make them a stronger company because they're going to shed Warner Media and Discovery and cast those off into a new single publicly traded company. And AT&T stockholders will get shares into that new company. Current AT&T shareholders will own 71% of the new company. So what you're going to be getting is you're going to be, you know, first you're going to retain shares in AT&T, and you will get new shares of the new company. Now you can sell those off and put that money into some other company to enhance your yields, you know, or you can just hold the two. I don't think it was announced at all if the new entity would pay any stock dividends. But AT&T then will be freed up to concentrate on their rollout of 5G. And for me, right now, let's see, AT&T comprises 0.3% of my holdings and 1%. It's 1% of my medium yield portfolio and only 0.3% of my total holdings. So, you know, I may make adjustments at that time, but I don't know. I don't think it will make a huge impact on my income. It will impact it somewhat, but not huge. According to MSN Money, they say AT&T will take a $43 billion in cash and securities in exchange for its Warner Media division, which include one of Hollywood's top studios, as well as the streaming giant HBO Max, with Discovery's stable of unscripted programs and channels such as 90 Day Finance and the Food Network. As part of the Reverse Morris Trust Agreement structure, AT&T shareholders will own 71% of the combined group, the company said, which will likely generate $52 billion in 2023 revenues and a combined subscriber base of nearly $150 million. Prior to the Discovery deal, AT&T paid an annual dividend of $2.08 per share, pegging the stock's dividend yield at 6.45%. And then I ran across an article here that seemed kind of interesting. 10 questions retirees get wrong. This was on the Fidelity website. That's one of my brokerage companies. And I thought it was a pretty decent list. The one that I didn't know was towards the end, and it was regarding the standard deduction. Those 65 and older actually get a higher standard deduction. And I had no idea. So at least you've got that looking, you got that to look forward to when you get old. According to the story, those 65 and older get an extra $1,700 in 2021 if they're filing as single or head of household, $1,650 for 2020. If you're married filing jointly, which is what I do, if one spouse is 65 or older and the other isn't, the standard deduction increases by $1,350. Or $1,300 for 2020. If both spouses are 65 or older, it increases for 2021, or the increase for 2021 is $2,700, $2,600 for 2020. So, you know, in my case, my wife is a little bit older than I am, so she'll turn 65 before me. We could take advantage of that a little earlier since we're not the same age. Nice. Another story out of the Wall Street Journal. They were reporting that $32 billion flowed into bank stocks this year, and it was a record already just for, we're not even done with the first half of the year. And, you know, my personal portfolio is a little heavy in financials, and I mentioned this before on the podcast where I try to keep any sector at 25% or below as a total of my holdings. You know, I don't want to concentrate too heavy in any one sector. So then if, bad things happen in the market, you know, you're not totally screwed putting all your eggs or most of your eggs in one basket. Now with financials, for me, it's about 26% of my total holdings. So it's slightly up, but not too bad out, you know. I still haven't made the adjustment yet or figured out which firms I would let go and what other sectors I would channel that money into. But from the story, let's see here. It shows, that investors eager to get exposure to an economic recovery are pouring into bank stocks like never before, putting the stocks on track for what could be their best year on record compared with the S&P 500. Bank of America and JP Morgan Chase recently issued gigantic bonds that rank as the two largest single bank deals in history, turbocharging a big year for financial debt issuance. After years of underperformance since the 2007-2008 financial crisis and a particularly brutal 2020, longtime bank investors are feeling some long-awaited validation. Analysts say the stock remains cheap, and many shareholders view them as relatively safe, and that grows along with the economy. You know, I agree with that since I hold so much in my portfolio in the financial sector. Let's just hope that it's not some type of a bubble that screws me. Target, another stock I hold. They reported a huge jump in sales and store visits. According to the Wall Street Journal, Target Corp. reported robust quarterly sales and a jump in store visits, a sign that the retailer continues to grab market share even as consumer buying habits changed during the pandemic. Comparable sales, those from stores and digital channels operating for at least 12 months, rose 23% in the quarter ended May 1st compared with the same period last year. The sales growth rate was twice as high as the same quarter last year when people rushed to buy food and household staples early in the pandemic. And Microsoft, they're not a big payer of dividends. They pay a small dividend, but I've liked Microsoft forever, and their stock, while Steve Ballmer was running the company, was just stagnant. Didn't go anywhere. They made tons of money hand over fist, but the stock went nowhere. So now that their stock is appreciating, and I've done pretty well just in the stock price alone. I wish they would up the dividend yield a little bit more. But for them in the news, they have announced that they will be ditching Internet Explorer. It's going to discontinue it. And, you know, I don't know if anybody will notice. Not too many people are using it anymore. You know, maybe on some old machines. Who even uses it? The browser I use right now is Edge, Microsoft Edge. I was using Chrome for the longest time, but over the years it just became so heavy, such a heavy browser, resource intensive, and I moved away from that, and I tried to move to the Brave browser, if you've ever heard of that. The Brave browser is more about privacy, and it's a very slimmed down browser, works very well, but because it's so privacy focused, it's not very good at sharing things like bookmarks and stuff that I use across multiple machines. So then I moved to Firefox, but Firefox just has never done it for me. It seems kind of clunky, you know, is a good term to use. It's not the most attractive browser either. But Edge, when Microsoft came out with Edge, it wasn't a very good browser to begin with. It wasn't compatible with a whole lot of things. It is based on Chromium, which is, you know, what Chrome is based on. But what they've done is they've optimized Chromium to work well with Windows. And Edge has become a very, very good browser, very stable, very attractive. It's very secure. And it just doesn't suck up all the resources that Chrome does. So that's the main browser I use right now. But from the Wall Street Journal, they reported that Internet Explorer has faded gradually from prominence as rival browsers such as Chrome from Google and Safari from Apple have won audiences. Internet Explorer had less than 2% of the global browser market for desktop computers in April, according to the web analytics firm StatCounter. Chrome had more than 65% of that market ahead of Safari's roughly 10%. Microsoft Edge had 8%, according to the data. Give Edge a try. I think you'll like it. If you like using Chrome, you're going to love Edge. Let's see here. Last bit of news is that the Fed, they lowered expectations for job growth in May. Let's hope it's just a temporary situation due to all the chaos caused by COVID-19, but who knows? The quicker things return to normal, I think the better for everyone. MSN Money reports that Federal Reserve officials and new Dallas Fed data have begun lowering expectations for May jobs growth in the United States as business hiring plans continue to outrun the supply of people able or willing to work. Dallas Federal Reserve President Robert Kaplan said Friday that hiring difficulties have continued through May and will likely lead to another weak jobs report following the lower-than-expected 266,000 positions added in April. I expect some of that will fix itself when the stimulus money runs out. You know, there's a lot of back and forth on whether or not that extra $300 that people get is actually keeping people out of the workforce or not. You know, combined with state benefits, it's quite a bit of money. It's not, you know, it's not break the bank. It's not windfall type money, but it's enough to keep people from like, can I just stay home for another month or two? Or, you know, do I really want to go in and work for 8 hours for almost the same amount of money that I'm getting for not working? It's close enough. So once those benefits end, I expect more people will have to go back to work. On to portfolio updates. My portfolio for the week, my low-yield portfolio is down 0.79% and still up for the month, 2.47%. Medium yield is down 0.26%, and that one is for the month up 3.09%. My high yield portfolio is the star of the week. It was actually up 2.15% and then boosting the month up 2.89%. And I guess this is the advantage of having the three different portfolios, where there's in the first two, the low yield and the medium yield, there's some overlap that I have there with companies. But there is a different mix of companies in there, so they, when the market goes up and down, it reacts differently because it's weighted in different ways. And the high yield especially, that one is so different than the low and the medium. Many times when the market is down or my other portfolios are down, that one will be way up. And if that one is down, the other ones will be up. So this is one of those situations where actually it was kind of a surprise. In dividend news, from my portfolio, Telefonica announced its next dividend of 0.17134 per share. Bringing the company's total payout over the last 12 months up 6.3%. Old Republic announced its next dividend of 22 cents per share, in line with previous payout. Community Bank announced its next dividend of 42 cents a share, in line with previous payout. Orchid Island Capital announced its next dividend, 0.065 cents per share, in line with the previous payout. MDU announced its next dividend, 0.2125 per share, in line with the previous payout. Plains announced their dividend of 0.18 per share, in line with its previous payout. FFTWX, this is a Fidelity fund that I invest with. They announced their next dividend of 0.002 cents per share, bringing the fund's total payout over the last 12 months down 4.7%. This is a... it is a fixed fund. It's the Fidelity Freedom 2025. So in 2025, this fund will go away. It's not a dividend growing fund, and it pays out 1.02% in yield right now. But when I purchased this originally, this was very early on in my investing for income strategy change, and this was seemed like a very secure fund. It doesn't, the value of it doesn't go up and go down. And it doesn't pay out a huge amount, but it pays out some. So that's the end of that. Let me see here. What do we got left today? That's it. So let's hit the disclaimer. .com and Kevin Bay are not registered investment advisors, brokers, or dealers. Information provided by ChasingTheYield.com and the Chasing the Yield podcast is provided for information and entertainment purposes only. All opinions provided are based upon sources believed to be accurate and are provided in good faith, but no warranty, representation, or guarantee, express or implied, is made as to the accuracy of the information contained herein. Nothing on ChasingTheYield.com or the Chasing the Yield podcast constitutes a representation or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. Please contact an investment professional if you have any questions regarding an investment. Okay, so that brings things to a close. Excuse me. So if you found any information on this podcast useful or entertaining, please donate to the show. I laugh because this was one mess of a show. It's kind of more disorganized, and my throat cannot get cleared today. Anyway, I've got a PayPal link on the website, and you can there's in the show notes. I got a PayPal link, or you can click on the big red donate button at the top of the site, chasingtheyield.com. This podcast is also Podcasting 2.0 compatible, and if you're using one of the fantastic independent podcast apps that are out there, you'll be able to see the transcript of the show, jump around the podcast to chapters if you're interested in specific topics, and view chapter image as well. If I'm talking about a particular company or chart or something like that, you can normally view these right in the app as I'm talking about it. Please support podcasting, podcastindex.org. You can go to podcastindex.org there and donate to them. You can go find yourself a nice independent podcast app at newpodcastapps.com. The podcast apps I use are Podcast Addict, Podverse, and Podfriend. Podcast Addict I use for some general news podcasts that I follow. Because they've got a nice playlist function, and it's a very friendly interface, and it allows me to just set those up and they just play one after the other. I use Podverse for grabbing clips of other podcasts that maybe I'll use in another show. And they make it very easy that when you hear something that you want to clip, like, oh, I'd like to play that, or I'd like to remember that, or whatever, you can just easily you create an account with them, and you take a little clip of it, and then you can get that little audio sound bite. Podfriend, on the other hand, Podfriend is part of the value for value model. And if you go to value for value with the number four for the word for, value, number four, value.io, you can take a look. This is also a value for value compatible podcast. So you can go there and explain everything, but basically it allows for streaming streaming cryptocurrency using something called the Lightning Network. And using Podfriend, you load they're called Satoshis. You load those onto your podcast app, and what that does is it pays the podcaster as you listen. It also allows you to give boosts. So if you like a certain segment or a particular portion of that podcast, you can hit the boost button and say, oh, I like that. Here's a little extra money. Now, Satoshis, of course, are just fractions of a penny, but it all adds up over time. And what they're trying to do at podcastindex.org is keep podcasting a free and independent platform for anybody who wants to use it. But that's all I've got for today. This is Chasing the Yield, and I'll talk to you next week.